It is. Let me move. Couldn't see anything for a second. That's better. Well, good morning. How are we feeling this morning? Seamus? Right? Kay smiling. I hope that's good. As was mentioned, the welcome by Barry, we're here because hopefully we consider that God is important in our lives. And the title of today's talk is The Stone the Builders Rejected. Just to start with, I do apologize if I offended anyone by saying, you white folk. I think Ben may have been offended, maybe, nope. Because I bought a new shaver yesterday, and a couple of days ago, and I said, I always just can't get to buy the right shaver. And my wife, very kindly, said, why not speak to some of the Black brothers? And I turned around and said, I is not black! And there's a certain type of response I have to my wife's input that she just kind of says, have it your way. Whatever you decide. If you're not black, fine by me. But I said, a lot of the Black brothers, when they shave, they have problems with stubble and the hair curling. I was trying to explain this to my wife, by the way. The hair kind of curls back in and you get all this stubble. So I don't have that problem. So I'm not like a typical black brother. But also, I is not white. Honestly, I was getting confused myself. I was like, what am I? I'm confused. But it's great to be here. It's great to consider the incredible nature of God. The stone the builders rejected. Psalm 118 says, and this is quoted by Jesus in the New Testament, it says, the stone the builders rejected has become the capstone. The Lord has done this and is marvelous in our eyes. This kind of phrase, for all of us who read the Bible, try and understand, Jesus quoted from this verse, but where did it come from? This is the kind of, it seems a bit of an unusual type of verse, and there are various stories going around. The one I find, I've read a few times, is the fact that during the building of Solomon's temple, all the stones had to be cut away from the temple because they didn't want any sound of cutting noises at the temple. So they'll make all the stones at the quarry, they'll cut them to size, they'll bring them to the builders building the temple, they'll lay them in place, and right at the start, this stone appeared that none of the builders recognized. And they couldn't figure out where it went, so they put it to one side. In fact, not just to one side, I think they sent it back. And they carried on building. And I think it was only at the point when they had to remove some scaffolding or remove some structural support that they realized that the building would not stand if they took away this support. And so they asked for the quarry people to send the stone that is missing. And the quarry people came back and said, we sent it 3 years ago. What have you done with it? And then some bright spark remembered that they'd left it or hidden it somewhere, and they brought that stone back, put it in place, took away the scaffolding, and the structural temple was there. That's what I've heard. I don't know if it's true or not. I'm going by it though, but that's what I understand. But that's where the phrase came from. Jesus himself used this phrase in the book of Matthew 21, and I'll read what Jesus says. Well, the quotes are set in verse, then he... But in the context that Jesus used this verse was to describe himself. Because the Jewish religious leaders, the spiritual people of the time, did not recognize God. Now we may take this quite lightly as we've read the Old Testament and the New Testament, but to think that the spiritual people of God did not recognize God is quite a frightening thought. That this stone the builders reject. Now, if you're a builder, or if you have builders, you get nervous if you realize the builder was kind of not putting in the right kind of stones or the right kind of support. The builder is supposed to understand what is needed. He's supposed to be able to discern and pick the right stone. So for that stone the builders rejected to be one of the most important stones in the building is a very frightening thought. Now, we may read that verse and just brush over it, but it has a significant theme for all of us here today. You know, the point really is for all of us is to, and I think God is incredible in this, is often God is trying to tell us something. We reject it. And whatever God is trying to tell us is so significant that it really is underpinning our lives. Often we don't see that stone. I don't know about you, but that is a frightening thought for me, to miss that stone that the builders, to reject that stone also that the builders did reject. In Luke 19, Jesus says something again quite interesting in verse 41. You don't need to turn there, but in Luke 19, verse 41, Jesus approached Jerusalem. As he approached Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it and said, "If you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes. The days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you and hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground, you and the children within your walls. They will not leave one stone on another, because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you." This is Jesus approaching Jerusalem. He breaks down in tears. And his tears, in this context, are linked to the destruction of the temple and so on, but he is... The Son of God is weeping. He is crying for people who don't really see or reject what God is trying to teach them. Now, if this was a Gentile bunch he was referring to, you might think, well, they didn't understand or they didn't know God. But no, he's talking to the people who should have known God. And Jesus again refers in this passage here, he links this rejection to the fact that you are rejecting something that will bring you peace. Now, I don't know about you. I dream of having a nice, peaceful life. When I say peaceful, I don't necessarily mean lying on a beach in Barbados, although that would be nice. Thank you very much. I think of peace as in really sleeping at night without anything on my mind. Going to bed at night, no worries. No one's trying to kill me. I'm not thinking bad about anyone else. Perfect wife, which she is, amen. One brownie point there, amen. Perfect kids, which they are, all the time. Confidence of my salvation, how's the day been? You know what's on my mind, am I thinking lustfully or am I at peace? I told my wife yesterday, I said, we're in Westfields in Stratford. I said, honey, I just find this place hard. And it's not just, you might say, well, the materialism, it's just the way that ladies dress. I told her, honey, I just don't like being here. I want to go home. I just don't like all it's telling me, sexuality, materialism. It's funny because maybe 10 years ago I wouldn't have felt that. Maybe I'm getting a bit older, I don't know. But I really felt to say, honey, it just burns my heart. Can we go home? Let's go now. Get me out of here. I don't want no Westfields. But the question for all of us today is, and I'm going to address a couple of issues, is this idea of rejecting something that is extremely important. The first thing I want to talk about is humility. Is humility that stone that you're rejecting? Is humility the one thing that if you decided to master in your life, would it have an incredible impact in how you serve God and how you live at home? I put in the heading here to focus on the marriages. It doesn't mean you singles keep quiet or you teens, but really it's to look at the area of husband and wife, because that's probably the relationship that pushes our buttons the most. I asked Manny and Maria, I said, how's it going? 4 weeks, been married, perfect. Marie said, we've had one argument. I said, you're doing all right. She said, no, I didn't ask her to share this, by the way, but she said, no, it was on the first day, I think. It was still not too bad. Lovely. But to look at marriages, and look at the verse in the book of Ephesians, chapter 4, verse 1, and this ought to do with humility. And I'm hoping and encouraging that you will ask yourself. Now, it's a tough one to say, to ask yourself, am I humble? And you say, yes, of course I'm humble. I think that goes without saying. All of us would probably answer the same way. Yes, of course I'm humble. So you've got to find another way to test that one out. You know what I mean? You can't go by your own expectations or your own experience. In fact, Ephesians chapter 4 verse 1, and this is Paul speaking, he says, as a prisoner for the Lord then, I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. Now, does anyone here know the difference between being humble and being completely humble? No? Anyone know? If you're humble, aren't you completely humble? Maybe Paul is referring to sometimes we try to act as if we're humble. I know I do. In my house, I try and put on the actions of humility, saying the right things, right movements, but in my heart, there are other things going on. So I think Paul is saying, listen, let's just cut this to the chase. Be completely humble. And the instruction here is the call for each and every one of us to be completely humble. Now, what is humility, you may ask yourselves? In the book of Philippians chapter 2, the Bible describes Jesus' description or how we are reminded of humility from Jesus. And I'll give you an example. It says in Philippians 2 verse 3, it says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourself. How is your marriage? How is the language between husband and wife? How is the language between wife and husband? You know, this is an interesting thing when we consider how we talk to one another. Is it in a tone or manner that displays this selflessness? Is it in a tone and manner that describes a sense of you are better than me? Because the call and the charge is to be like Jesus. And it says do nothing out of selfish ambition. Now, if we were to take on this banner of what we've just heard here, of being selfless, thinking about our spouse more than ourselves. Now, guys, this really is a difficult one. Is to really take a step where, and I'm saying maybe we need to pray about this one, where you pray in the morning for every word that comes out of your spouse's mouth or your mouth, remember this verse. Nothing. How is my husband doing? How is he feeling? How was his day? How do you think sisters are going, bro, this is a bit too much. Don't put this heavy burden, heavy yoke on me. But the Bible really is saying, do these things. Really consider, how is he? He's had a tough day at work. Well, I've had a tough day with the big kids. I know you've had a tough day with the kids. But we'll get to the sisters in a minute, alright? I'm just trying to encourage the brothers, alright? Thank you. So the wives can really meet their husband. Now, I'm not saying bring the slippers when he walks through the door. With a cup of tea in their hand. Lola, why are you shaking? Where's Michael? Where's Michael Lee? Was that a defiance or was that a humility? I'll tell Mike to expect slippers at the front door tomorrow when he comes back from work. A cup of tea and a card and a hug and a kiss. And I'm sure he'll feel good. Now, we're talking about the stone the builders rejected. Things that you can do and live that will transform your life. Now, the reason why Jesus mentioned this, and he mentioned it to the religious people, is that often we don't see how important some of these things are, and we neglect them. So I'm not saying you're not humble, or you are humble. All I'm saying is humility the thing that is missing in your life that will really transform your spiritual life? Because the Bible here says, be completely humble. I think there's some ways that we can all learn to grow in our humility. I know the brothers over the recent months have talked about humility. And it's one of those things that as soon as you get close to being humble, you've lost it. I think that's the definition. As soon as you think you're humble, you're no longer humble. It's a funny one, isn't it? Oh, you wish you could just grab it and then say, I've mastered humility. Come to me if you want to learn, everyone. I've cracked it. You've obviously lost it at that point. You've lost the humility. But there are certain things. One of the things that really displays humility is how much you say thank you. How much you appreciate what other people have done for you. And again, I'm talking about husbands and wives. How often do you show gratitude and appreciation for things done for you or done for the children or done in that way? Thank you. Lots of thank yous. A big one for me was realizing that where I am today is really as a result of the efforts of so many other people, of helping me spiritually. So many people in this room, so many people when I was a younger Christian, took the time to explain and help us. I know with our kids, we looked around and think they helped us immensely in our marriage and our kids. And so if somebody says to me, Andy, your kids are doing great, I'd love, and I should be saying, amen. Thanks, Paul and Jemima. In other words, you're kind of deflecting the kind of, you're moving on the kind of benefit to someone else. I know you may think it's me that did it, but really it wasn't. It was somebody helped. Somebody took the time to explain it to me. Don't think that I just naturally took on a role that you think, no, it didn't come to me naturally. Somebody helped me. And this sense of kind of saying thank you, appreciation, this also this sense of recognizing that the great things that God is doing in your life, other people have put an effort into that, and you can thank them through by saying, hey, they really helped me in this way. And I'm sure we can talk about that about so many of us in this room. Boy, you know, if you're talking about evangelism, man, Leslie. Leslie took me out day after day. I mean, you can mention people, talk through people, and really recognize where these gifts and incredible strengths come more. Another great one is how you deal with anger and revenge. You know, it's very tempting to want to express anger. Now, anger really is just, you can't say somebody made you angry. No, they may have pushed your buttons, but you became angry. And you express that in a way that isn't of humility. And I think in our marriages, in our relationships, how we talk, how we deal with things that frustrate us, how we deal with anger, how we deal with all these things, if they're dealt with in humility, I know my wife and I really spend a lot of time talking. Since the marriage dynamics course of 3 years ago, I think our talk time has probably gone up by a factor of 10, which you might think is a lot, but considering how much it was before, it's a lot better anyway. A factor of 10. Just talking, learning to communicate in a way that is non-offensive, but is direct, open, honest, and we have healthy times of just talking about things that irritate us, maybe things that make us feel good. This morning my wife was so excited about the Hebrews class. She was so expressive about the amount of work the teaching ministry put into the Quiet Time series. Ever since Friday, she said it quite a few times. I'm really grateful. These guys have done a great job. They've helped me to see things I hadn't seen before. This is a great tool. This is fantastic. Time and time again, she keeps expressing these things. So we have this time to talk. But humility, and I wanted to ask yourself, is humility the stone? Is it the thing that you're rejecting? And this is a healthy one. You can always ask people around you about this area of humility. Do you listen? Or do you talk more than you listen? Do you get more of that, or do you get more listening? I love, for a while we were discipled by Elridge and Yolanda, and I just loved sitting with them because half the time we'd be talking. And I'd be like, come on, Ellen, Yolanda, give us some, help us out here. And we just talk. And then after about an hour of us talking, there'd just be a few words of wisdom. Food for the week. And we'd be fully encouraged and nourished and be off. But this allowed us to talk and explain ourselves. And usually half the talking would have solved our problems. But it was great just to talk and really be able to communicate in a way that was incredible. But listening, talking, anger, all these things. And look at your marriage, guys. And sisters as well. Look at your marriages. Have they got humility? Is it built on humility? Of course, I want you to remember humility, guys, because that is something to remember. The second thing I want to talk about is in Proverbs chapter 3. In Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5, it reads, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he will make your paths straight. Trusting in God. Is this a stone that you've rejected? Now, this verse is tempting to use very casually. Of course I trust in God. Yes, but maybe you missed the second bit of the verse that says, and I'll read it out again, lean not on your own understanding. A test of this verse you can make to yourself. And an easy way to do that is to see how many decisions you make based on your own understanding. I'll give an example. I'm not going to go to church on Friday nights because I am feeling discouraged and tired. Now help me here. Is this your own understanding, or is this trusting in God? Which one is it? You can talk about things with your children, where they go to school. You can even talk about where you live. I'm going to live somewhere where the house prices are not too great, where we'll be able to have a 4-bedroom house, and my kids will be able to go to local school. I will be about 10 miles away from church, but that is my own understanding. Now tell me, is this trusting in God, or is this leaning on your own understanding? You know, this verse, occasionally there's some verses that freeze me. When I read them and I consider the incredible impact of what it is saying, I grew up, my father was a professor. He's died now. I would call him a genius. Personally, he did very well. I think his lowest mark in any exam was something like 97%. And that was because he didn't finish. I'm serious. It was something like that. I inherited his mathematics books. He did mechanical engineering. I inherited his maths books for secondary school. He went through all the questions in the back, all the questions that were given at the back of the book. He corrected some of the questions and sent the corrected manuscript back to the publisher. I'm serious. And I look at these books and think, oh man, what a hard act to follow. Dad, just bear with me, Dad. I'm just going to get through school and get through university, and I'm not going to be as good as you, but amen. But that was the kind of foundation for my academics. Now, in many ways, I did okay, all right? I was at Imperial College. A few of us were there at Imperial College. Tony Cameron, Paul Rowden, Ed Okundi. Anyone else? Did I miss you out? No? No one wants to claim? I was there. One of the teams, I was there. But I did pretty well. So when I became a Christian, my whole life to this point had been leaning on my own understanding. And don't get me wrong, God has given us brains, okay? I don't think God is saying, take your brain out, leave it over there. What do I say? Just go ahead and do it. I don't think that's what God is saying. But God made us. The Bible makes it quite clear. God made us. He knows what is best for us. When we grow up and we get a little bit of intelligence, we start to think, I know what is best for me. I will do it my way. And God says, no, you don't know what is best for you. Trust in me with all of your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. And it concludes in a very nice way. In all your ways, acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. Now, the Bible teaches that God will make our path straight. And this whole area of trusting in God, I think, is a bigger issue for most of us than we probably do recognize. Because what I think what God is saying is, if you trust in me, okay, I know how you feel. I know you may not be well. I may not feel certain things. But think again how you make your decisions. Do you just leave it there and say, you know what, God, this is what I want to do. Let me go and pray for a little while. Take some time out to pray. God, I don't feel like going to church. I don't want to talk to that sister tonight. I don't want to do this. I don't feel like doing that. I feel this. I feel that. That's fine. Talk to God in prayer. Another great way is to have people you can trust who are close friends. What do you think about what I'm thinking? I'm thinking of moving to, Ipswich or something. Is that a good idea? Talk to people who you can trust. One or two people maybe. Pray about your spiritual life in that respect. Your kids' schooling. There's so many things where this verse applies. At work, in your relationship with your spouse, in your marriage, use it. If you're not dating yet and you're single, use this verse. You know what, God? I mean, I met my wife, Sandra, I think another sister invited me on a date to their house at Christmas. This must have been about 20 years ago now. Looked at you a lot younger than I do now. But 20 years ago, I went on a date. Sandra thought I was going to be late. You Nigerians, always late. I think I was late, actually. spread of Nigeria, but I think I got a bit late. But prior to that, I broke up a relationship with a sister in the East, actually, at the time. We'd broken up, and I prayed that I'd be dating again within 6 months. I think December was around month four. Not looking good at month four. You haven't even met the sister yet, is it? I thought, wow, 2 months to go, and I'm going to be in trouble. Then, but I kept on praying. I want to be dating within 6 months. I haven't seen I don't think I've seen the lady yet. And then I happened to sit opposite Sandra at this dinner. Right opposite Sandra. And at first, I mean, this is strange because I'm actually very close friends with Lolu, who's married to Sandra's sister. I was close friends with him before. We were great friends. I knew Sandra's sister, but I did not know Sandra. So I sat opposite Sandra, and somehow in jest, we started to have a little bit of a laugh. And I said, which I don't remember saying, but I think I said, why don't we just get married? I'm not suggesting you use this line, brothers. But it worked for me. Now, did I get within the 6 months? No, I didn't. I think we decided to date in the 7th month. But I was still fired up. I thought, wow, this is great. Now, trusting in God is not a natural thing. In fact, the way to trust in anyone is to build a relationship with that person. Now, I'm saying you're trusting God. You're saying, well, I don't even know God. How do I know my interests are going to be met? And how do I know? Well, do you know God? Yeah, I have a quiet time every now and then. No, do you know God? Do you hang out with? Do you understand God's love for you? Do you understand God's vision and desires for you? Do you know God? You can't trust in the Lord if you don't really know the Lord. Get to know Him. Understand His incredible love. Understand His incredible... I'm amazed at God's wisdom. You know, when I start to read the Bible and see how God helps us to purify us, to train us. Honestly, if I wasn't a Christian today, I don't know where I'd be. I just don't have it. I'd even want to think about it. Because my life would certainly be a mess. Because of my arrogance and all kinds of sin and evil, it would be a mess. But by obeying God's law, I can see the incredible fruit in my life. You know, today we've been talking about the stone the builders rejected. You know, is that stone humility for you? Is that something you need to really decide to work on and grow in so that your marriage, your relationships will be strong and great? Is it trusting in the Lord? Is that something that you need to work on? Are you going to start praying through you might call them simple decisions, but they can be big decisions. And I've described a few of them. From whether you come to church on a Friday, from whether you go to family group on a Wednesday, whatever day you have it. Where you live is another one. It's a big issue. How you talk to people is another issue. How you deal with your problems, how you deal with conflict. All these things are ways we can trust in the Lord or learn how to trust in Him so that He'll produce the fruit in our lives. Thank you for your attention. I hope you have a great day. Amen.
I really want to thank Andy for today's sermon. As always, when Andy speaks, it's very deep, it's very thoughtful, it's very considered. But well, what a scary thought, rejecting the very thing you needed most of all. That's such a great theme and a key theme of the Bible. I think for me, resonated what Andy was saying about the atmosphere in the home, the way I speak to Margareta and the boys, and just having this kind of irritation in my heart, not really dealing with that, not really considering them better than myself. That was a great point. Then the bigger things, the bigger decisions of life. We moved here in 2007. That was a decision that took around 2 years to make, and it was one where we got advice. We looked around. I remember going on a father and son retreat, kind of with looking to see which was the best part of the whole London church to move to. I didn't tell anybody. I was kind of just observing what would God throw in my way. And immediately we were put in the same group as the Colliers. And they were so welcome and they really embraced us and we thought, wow, this is good. And I came away from that retreat thinking, yes, it has to be the East. But it wasn't, it's a big decision. And it was all about making sure that in the future, that our family would be in, really in a church that was suitable for them, not someplace far away that's easy. It was expensive, it cost money, but it was the right thing to do. So these big things of life are really, really key. Let's make sure we're being humble with God and getting the input we do need. So I want to thank Andy again for a fantastic service. Sermon. And he's just changed his hat once again, so he's now going to lead us in our final song. Andy.